clones. Jim Rome here. Now, before we get it rolling with the Daily Jungle podcast, I want to let everybody know that I've been nominated for the National Radio Hall of Fame, and my category is voted on by you, the listener, and the polls are open right now. So do me the biggest solid you have ever done. If you're listening to this podcast on your phone, text the number 800 to 96,000. In other words, text the number 800 to 96,000. Do that right now and then come back to the podcast right after. If you're listening on your computer, just open up another tab and head on over to radiovote.com. That's radiovote.com, and you can vote for me right there as well. Remember, it's not an either-or proposition. You can vote twice. I need you to do both those things. And in the meantime, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your support. It's not my thing to go out stumping for votes, but I really do not have any choice this time. So thank you very much for listening, and thank you for voting. Now, let's get to the Daily Jungle.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Let me start with the NBA. Now, there were no NBA Finals games yesterday, or game, I should say. But that does not mean that it was a full day off for the Warriors and Cavs, because it was not. The players met with the media. My guy, Chris Haynes, got to LeBron James in the scrum and asked him about the video of the Cavs huddle that went viral at the end of regulation in game one.
There's a clip that's gone viral of that game one in the timeout huddle after that. Before going into overtime, it seemed like you were just finding out that you guys still had a timeout. What was going through your head at that time, and was it pretty self-explanatory?
Pretty much. It went viral.
Yeah, pretty much.
Damn cameras. I haven't seen them. I'm not on social media right now, but.
Let me tell you something. That initial reaction from LeBron is just amazing. It's like he's having this flashback to that moment, and the moment is terrible. Like he goes to this really, really dark place for just a moment, or at least as dark a place as you can be when we're talking about playing basketball. But then he comes out of it when he asks about the video going viral, and then he cracks that joke about the cameras. But my man Chris is persistent. He's doing his job, even if it means making LeBron go back and return to the darkness for a moment. Because clearly, that was a dark, dark moment for Bron.
Could you elaborate a little bit more?
You're taking me back to game one.
I'm sorry. It just
I finally got game one out of my head. You're taking me back, huh, Chris? Okay, hold on. Let me put myself back there. If I remember, I was sitting on the bench and kind of just contemplating the last couple of seconds of what just happened, what expired, and from JR dribbling the ball out to G Hill missing the free throw, seeing Draymond step in early on the lane violation, asking myself, did I have a lane to actually drive it if I didn't? So there's a lot of things that's playing through my head.
Now we're getting somewhere, and that was just the start. Game one was Thursday night. This exchange took place on Tuesday. A lot of things have transpired since then, but you can tell LeBron is only just barely over how much that game hurt. The pain of losing a game that they had seemingly already won, and pretty much losing it in the worst way possible, with a missed free throw and an absolute bonehead move.
You have been getting criticized for not trying to pick up your teammates during that time. Is that fair criticism, not being in your shoes?
Me? Me being criticized? No. You're saying I got criticized for something, right? No, I don't believe that. Not me. I don't care at all. We're in the NBA Finals. How much more picking up teammates you want me to do? In NBA Finals, to compete for a championship.
Truth. They are in the NBA Finals. It could be for an NBA championship. And there's nothing more that this guy can do. At that point, he was on his way to 51 points. He had pretty much left everything on the floor, and you want this guy to be in the huddle patting J.R. Smith on the back. You want this guy to be in the huddle cheering on George Hill. How many of you would be doing that in his situation, given what just happened? None. Zero. This guy's a grown man playing with grown men. He doesn't need to be picking them up or cheering them on after they just threw away the game and any chance they had at making this an actual series. And for all you people who insist on comparing LeBron and MJ, ask yourself this. Would Jordan be patting his guys on the back in the huddle if they just did him like that? Hell no, he wouldn't. He wouldn't be picking these guys up. He'd probably be punching every one of them in the face. Phil Jackson would have had to hold Jordan back from choking these guys out all at once. You watch that video. Watch the video and see the reaction on LeBron's face when it's confirmed that they had another timeout. You can see how much pain this guy had. You can practically see the life drain right out of this guy because he knows the stakes. That wasn't a game. That was the game. That was the series. Look, this guy will never admit it because he's not giving in. This guy will never admit it because you know he's going to battle. But deep down, he knows that they were going to get one chance to win in Oracle. One game where Golden State was not going to play that well. One game where he would be on fire. One game that they could steal. You do that, and this series is turned on its head. You do that, and they put pressure on the Warriors, and they might not only rip the home court, they might rip the whole damn series. Well, game one was that game. Game one was that chance. And they lost it at the end of regulation. And worse than losing it, they gave it away. And LeBron knew. He knew overtime was going to go the way it went. Golden State knew that once they got over the way they did in regulation, once they got as lucky as they were going to smash them in overtime. LeBron knew it was coming, just like Golden State knew it was coming. We all did. And that's exactly what happened. So say this nonsense that he should have been leading cheers in the huddle, that he should have been the guy to pick everybody up who just let him down. Or best of all, maybe he's a poor role model because he didn't do that. That might be the worst take ever. It's just nonsense. It's just nonsense. People spewing lava, hot takes, bile, and bullcrap because they don't like LeBron. That's fine. You don't have to like this guy. But you don't have to make up reasons to hate the guy either. There was nothing this guy could have said or done in that moment to undo what the slugs he's running with had done moments earlier. If you're looking to blame the result of that game on his mood or his actions in that huddle, you're pretty much a dope. There are two reasons why that team is in that huddle at the end of that game. What LeBron did during the game and what everybody around him didn't do in the final 5 seconds. Move on. Move on. He is trying to, and so should you.
Me being criticized?
Morgan Burnett is my guest. Morgan, nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Good. I'm great. Listen, you've been going through workouts with the team, and I saw you said already that the camaraderie is great in that locker room. So let me start right there. How would you describe the vibe among these players? And then how valuable is that when it comes to having success on the field? Does it translate?
Oh, I think that's real. I think that's the key element to success is just the camaraderie and the bond that you have amongst your team in the locker room. And just me getting here, being a new guy here, I mean, they welcome me with open arms, and you could just tell – from just sitting back, watching from afar, and being in meetings with them, that the closeness that they have in this organization, and I'm just thankful to be a part of it. And like I said, I'm looking forward to what's ahead of us down the future.
Now, when you mentioned the organization, you were part of a legendary organization in Green Bay, and now you join another one with a tremendous tradition in Pittsburgh. So, when you were looking at the options in front of you, how important was it to be part of an organization that has that tradition of winning that you're used to?
I think that's very important because, I mean, at the end of the day, that's why we play the game. You play the game to try to win and set yourself up with the best opportunity to win. And like you said, I mean, they have a tradition for winning. I came from Green Bay where they have a tradition for winning, and then I'm blessed enough to be with another organization where they have that same value and that same reputation of winning.
Morgan Burnett, my guest. Listen, there's being a Pittsburgh Steeler, and then there's playing defense for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And every Steelers defensive player that I've had on this show over the years talks about how much pride they have in carrying on the tradition of that Steeler defense. So what's it mean to you to be a member of the defense and now a part of that tradition?
Oh, man, like I said, that means a lot because, I mean, growing up, being a fan of football or just watching those guys from afar, when you think of Pittsburgh, you know, you think of all of the great defensive players that came before you. Even my position coach, Darren Perry, was a safety for the Steelers for a long time. Playing under Don Capers, he came from the Steelers as well. So, you know, just to have that opportunity, man, you're really excited, and I'm looking forward to it, and I can't wait.
Hey, guys, let me ask you something. Are you ready to reduce the gray in your hair finally? If so, you want to go with the smartest product available, Experience Control GX from Just for Men. It's the first shampoo with a brain. So what do I mean by that? What makes it so smart? It reduces gray the same way gray grows in, gradually. And the more you shampoo with Control GX, the less gray you're going to have, naturally. Just use it until you like what you see. How smart is that? Smart enough to be voted Men's Hair Care Product of the Year. Gradually reduce gray with the first shampoo with a brain. You can find Control GX in the shave aisle. This is brilliant shampoo. Control GX, look for it in the shave aisle. Morgan Burnett joining us. You talk about being the new guy. Listen, you've been in the league for a while now, and other guys look to you as a vet, and they kind of take their cue from you. I'm curious, when you first got into the NFL, who were some of your veterans and teammates that you respected and maybe even modeled yourself after?
Oh, yeah, it was for sure Nick Collins, Tremont Williams. Those guys really took me under their wings, you know, and I still have a relationship with them, and even a guy that wasn't on the defensive side, James Jones, those guys kind of took me under their wings, and we built a tight bond. They still consider me their little brother now, so they always checking up on me, and we're always talking and just, you know, about the game and just things outside of the game because we're all married with kids. So, you know, they're always there to mentor me, and I'm very appreciative of that.
Morgan Burnett joining us. Rookie Terrell Edmonds has said that he's already learning a lot from you. So I'm kind of curious, you're going to give it back, you're going to pay it back, or pay it forward. What kind of things have you been teaching him, and what do you make of what you've seen from that rookie so far?
I mean, Terrell is a guy, like, you can see him, he's a very mature guy. You know, he comes in ready to work. You can tell the stage is not too big for him, and he's a guy that asks questions, and he's going to try to go out and do everything that you tell him. And you can tell, like, I'm looking forward to seeing him out there, man. He's going to be a bright young talent in this league. And I just kind of just do what those guys, Nick Collins, Tremont Williams, did for me. You know, just set examples by the way that I practice. And I let them know, like, I'm always there for him. If he has a question, I'm there to answer him. I mean, our locker's right next to each other, so we're in constant communication with one another.
Communication's the word, right? I'm glad you brought that up because you talk a lot about the importance of communication, and not just in workouts and not just pre-snap, but during the snap and post-snap. I mean, communication feels like a pretty basic thing, but is it that simple? How important is it, and what kind of a difference does it make?
It makes a huge difference. I think that's one of the key elements to the game is, like you just said, is you got your pre-snap communication, your communication during the play, and sometimes your communication post-snap. So communication is key, and that starts with the camaraderie and the bond that you have in the locker room. And when you have that, it makes the communication that much easier. And when you're communicating on the same page, you play that much faster.
Morgan Burnett is my guest. So now you're entering your ninth season. I know you've got a lot of football left in you, but nine seasons is really impressive, and it's not something that just happens. I know you're there to help the younger guys, but how much pride do you take in the fact that you're in a league and a business where guys are coming out of college every single year, they're looking to take your job, but you're closing in now on double-digit seasons?
I mean, you take a lot of pride in that. And like you said, man, it's not easy. Like you said, you got young guys coming in every year, bigger, faster, stronger. And, you know, they always say, go around and say NFL stands for not for long. But just to have that honor to say that, you know, I've been playing in this league going on 9 years now, I mean, that's something I never imagined. It's just something I'm very thankful for. And I really feel blessed, and I thank God every day.
You tell me otherwise, but I think one of the reasons that you're still there, and you and I have talked about this, is your versatility. It's becoming more and more important in the NFL. So at this point in your career, do you see yourself as a safety who sometimes does other things, or maybe do you see yourself as a defensive player, and no matter where you put me, I'm going to make some plays for you?
Yeah, I see myself as just as a safety that can do multiple things. I feel like in today's game, is as a safety, you have to be versatile. I mean, the game grows and the game changes every year, and I feel like the more you can do, the longer you can stick around.
We're talking to Morgan Burnett. So we're just over 3 months away from the season opener against Cleveland. Obviously, lots of work to do between now and then. But do you have any idea what it's going to feel like in your first official game in the Steelers black and gold?
Man, it's going to be different. Like you said, I've been putting on one uniform for 8 years. And now I'm putting on another uniform. But I think it's exciting. It's a new chapter in my career. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited. My family's excited about it. And I can't wait.
And Morgan, you know, I'm looking at this thing, and you see how politics and sports do not necessarily mix, and people really don't want to get into that. What do you make of what happened with the Eagles and the president rescinding his invitation? Were you paying close attention to that, and what's your reaction to it?
I haven't really paid. I heard a little bit about it yesterday. I haven't really paid close attention. I'm going to try to look into it and read, pull up some articles and read about it today. But I heard it briefly, but I didn't gain enough information to really know what's going on. I had to read up on it today.
Morgan Burnett is my guest. All right, then. Listen, you've got your annual youth football camp coming up 1 month from tomorrow. Let me in. What's that camp like, and how much fun do you have doing that?
Oh, man, it's a lot of fun, man. This will be our seventh year doing it, and it's just a big free football camp, youth camp that I do in my community back home in College Park, Georgia. And the kids just come out, you know, have some of my teammates come out, my college teammates. And it's just like a big family affair where we're teaching the kids different techniques and just more so for the kids to have something to do in the summertime and just try to get those kids. You know, nowadays kids like to be on gadgets and video games, just something to get them outside of the house and maybe get them a break from their parents. But it's a lot of fun, and we have a lot of help from our community.
Hey, my man, help me with that. How do we get the kids off the gadgets? I've got a 13-year-old man, nice athlete, good kid, smart kid. I ripped that thing out of his hand. How do we get the kids off the gadgets?
Man, so I have a 9-year-old and a 3-year-old. Even my 3-year-old know how to work
right?
iPad better than me.
That's it.
So I just try to, man, I try to find ways to get them out of the house and do something. Just try to, you know, so they're not locked in. I feel like those gadgets will take over your whole world.
Game 3 of the NBA Finals is tonight. And if round 4 of the Warriors-Cavs does not do it for you, you might want to check in to see round infinity of Kendrick Perkins versus the rest of the world. Now, you might remember that Kendrick got into it with Drake in the Eastern Conference semifinals. And while the exact origins of that beef were not clear, Perk said that he was jawing at Serge Ibaka. Drake got involved, and according to Perk, and I quote, he said something slick, so I said something back. Sit your ass down and watch the game. End quote. The Celtics apparently did not want any of Kendrick Perkins in the Eastern Conference Finals, and that series proceeded without a Perkins-related incident, which is a good thing. And it's a wise strategy for everybody involved. And even though Perk did not dress for game 1 of the finals, well, he did, but he was in a suit. Even though he was in a suit, he was still involved. Because that was the game where Draymond Green did his now legendary cheerleader impression that was directed at Perkins. Dave McManaman summed it up perfectly in a tweet. Again, quote, Draymond Green is mimicking a cheerleader waving pom-poms to mock Kendrick Perkins, who is screaming towards the Warriors' side of the court as he wears a suit on the Cavs bench. So now it's getting spicy, right? Then comes game 2. At the end of the third quarter, Steph Curry and Perk get into it. Steph goes up for a shot. Perk's legs were in his way when he landed, and the two of them start to jaw. And I understand that. Curry wants to be able to land without having some guy in a suit sticking his giant legs in the way. Kendrick Perkins is not exactly the kind of dude to be cutting anybody slack or giving anybody any free space to land, especially in the NBA Finals, even if he is wearing a suit. Curry, as you might imagine, just shook it off as, quote, much ado about nothing after the game, except his teammates didn't see it that way. And as Chris Haynes reported, they were pretty pissed about Kendrick Perkins. Yeah, well, so is Kendrick Perkins. Perkins is pissed, and he's confused. He told the Boston Globe, I was just sitting there, and he landed on my leg. And he was standing over my leg. And I don't understand what people want me to do. He was like, what you on? And I'm like, what you mean, what I'm on? I'm sitting over here. End quote. That's strong. That's solid. That's classic Kendrick Perkins. But here comes your money quote. Quote, I don't know why people keep wanting to pick battles this way. Might want to choose that bleep wisely, man. Rather than bleeping with me. I don't think I'm the problem that they want, though. Might want to pick another battle. End quote. I mean, line for line, that's about as good as it gets. Quote, I don't know why people keep wanting to pick battles this way. It's genius. Classic enforcer who just wants to be left alone. Do not pick battles with me because then I will have to finish them and finish you. And then he follows that one up by saying, might want to choose that bleep wisely, man, rather than bleeping with me. In other words, here's your warning now. Stand the hell down. You're picking the wrong dude to jack with. And then he closes it with, quote, I don't think I'm the problem that they want, which is a legendary quote. Now, normally something like that coming from a guy who's in a suit is just fake, tough guy bullcrap. But there's nothing fake, tough guy about Kendrick Perkins. And just because he's been around for a minute or two does not mean that he's lost anything off his game. Kendrick Perkins is the LeBron James of Kendrick Perkins. And even more amazing, Perk is only a month and a half older than LeBron. And do not let that nicely tailored suit fool you. This guy's right. He's not the problem that you want. My man will go. And he's just looking for a reason to go. He's been contributing as this quasi-coach in the playoffs because he's got a great head for the game. But he's got some great hands. And it says here that he really wants to give them to somebody. Don't get it twisted. The main event is already over. The Cavs already got cold cocked. But Perk is obviously looking to take a body or two with him. And everybody in the association knows who will go and knows who won't go. Who you can mess with and who you don't want any part of. Perk is the latter. LeBron has got a huge problem. Well, actually, LeBron, he's got four huge problems. The dudes that he has to run with at any given time during any given game. But Perk is right. Perkins is the problem that Golden State does not want. Perkins is the problem that nobody wants. That's not some fake, tough guy bullcrap. That's legit. That guy cracks me up. I love Perk. I miss him. Quick shout out to those of you who have your own business, because I know a number of you do. The U.S. Postal Service is an important tool for any business because it reaches every household every single day. Now, Stamps.com is the easiest way to access all the amazing services of the post office. Stamps.com never closes. You can print postage for letters or packages at your convenience 24/7. You can also print postage for any mail class right from your own computer. And you have the exact amount of postage every single time. You never underpay and you never overpay. I have used Stamps.com for a long time because it is so fast, it is so easy, it is so convenient, and it does save me money. Right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer, which includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. All you have to do is go to Stamps.com, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in jungle. Once again, I love this service. I know you will too. Go to Stamps.com and enter jungle. Calais Campbell is my guest. Calais, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Hey, man, living the dream, as always.
I was going to say, as always, my man, as always, and you strike me as somebody who's always happy, always upbeat, always positive. So when OTAs got underway, it seemed like you were pretty much genuinely enjoying them. When you've been in the league as long as you have, a lot of guys could probably do without the OTAs. So how do you find time or find a way to actually enjoy the OTAs?
I feel like actually getting older, I liked him more. You know, it seems like when you're closer to the end, you start appreciating every moment of it, you know, and I feel like I got some good football left for quite a while. But, you know, as you know, going to my 11th year, I realized that, you know, these moments are precious, you know, spending time with the team, you know, trying to work on my craft, get better. You know, I appreciate it a lot more than I did when I was younger.
I get that. Calais Campbell joining us. Listen, I know you're already focused on next season and all the goals you have in front of you, but can you take one more look back at last season? When you look at last season, one of the best in Jacksonville history, what are the moments that stick out to you the most?
Really just the way we came together as a team. You know, I think a lot of guys believed that we could win, you know, but they didn't really, you know, it was new. You know, a lot of guys on the team never really experienced winning before, you know, and so that belief and that confidence that grew, you know, as the season went along, and just seeing the guys kind of really start to really believe that we can win it all, you know, and, you know, obviously that we fell a little short, but that is a, you know, a belief that has stuck with us and has really carried us over to this year.
Right, so as you go forward, I mean, how different is it? Is it a different feel when guys know that they can do it because they've done it as opposed to just talking about doing it?
Yeah, there's confidence in the history. You know, when you've done something before, the confidence comes a lot faster. So definitely, you know, there's a lot of, you know, it's better for you to know that you can do something because you did it before. You know, the potential of it is nice, but now we know we can get back there again. You know, we have to put the same kind of work in.
Calais Campbell joining us. Now, you received a lot of credit, and rightfully so, for the role that you played in turning this thing around. You know, I'm curious, how much pride do you take in the fact that you arrived and were able to have such a big impact so quickly? And then secondarily, how were you able to have that much of an impact that fast?
You know, I honestly believe that I get more credit than I really deserve. You know, I mean, don't get it twisted. I work really hard to really, make a difference on the football team. But I was pleasantly surprised at the leadership that we had in the building already before I got there, you know, and Telvin Smith. And some of the young guys really developing to be leaders, you know. And so it was nice to see some of these guys, you know, really take on a bigger a role and really embrace it. And it worked out for us, you know. So I get a lot of credit. And, you know, it's nice to get, you know, appreciated for your efforts. But really, you know, there are so many guys on the team that make a big difference, you know. And so, you know, I definitely want to, you know, it's really been a team thing, you know, from our secondary. In our O-line, the way they played, you know, just, I mean, the way Blake's grown. And, you know, just, I mean, there's so many different pieces that it takes to be successful. And our coaching staff, too. You know, I think Coach Merrill doesn't really get enough appreciation. He did win some awards for, you know, Coach of the Year. But, I mean, what he did in just building the confidence and teaching us how to prepare the right way, it's unbelievable.
Calais Campbell, my guest. I mean, Calais, you pretty much just gave everybody in the entire facility credit, and I understand that. I get it. I mean, I'm not going to get it twisted, but the fact is you are officially the mayor of Saxonville, and I know that you had a lot of confidence in what this team could do. I know there's a lot of leadership in and around that locker room, on that coaching staff, even within the facility, but did you have any idea that the community and all of Duval would embrace you and even this team the way it did over the course of last season?
I did not, you know, that was definitely, you know, I mean, they welcomed me with open arms, you know, as soon as I came in, you know, the team was very excited about it. And then after the first game, I mean, it just, you know, started with a bang and the city just got on fire and they knew that, you know, that everything we were talking during our season had potential to come through. And throughout the whole season, as the season went along, I mean, you just saw the whole city of Jacksonville unite, you know, and just become one, and everybody was, I mean, the city was just jumping, you know, nonstop, over and over again, where you went. You know, people were just, you know, so excited about the team and about what we're doing. And that's a good feeling to have, you know, when the city comes alive like that, you know, it really helps build that chemistry you need to win.
We're talking to Calais Campbell. You mentioned at the very top of the interview how much you appreciate everything right now because you've been in the thing as long as you have. A few days back, you tweeted a great picture of yourself when you were back at Miami with the caption, "Back when this was just a dream, but even back then, I knew it was just a matter of time before I was dominating on Sundays." I love the pic. I love the caption. But did you always know that you would have the kind of career and be as dominant as you are? And if you knew, how did you know?
I've always been really good at this game. I started playing at 6 years old, and I remember I had a high school football coach, and Coach Mulaney, and his brother played in the NFL for a long time, Ryan Mulaney, for the Vikings. And I just remember him telling me that if I wanted to, I could be really good in the NFL if I put the work in. And, And I mean, there's so many other moments at different times, but, you know, I just remember, like, thinking, like, well, you know, and not going to so many different stories, but just thinking to myself, like, you know, physically, you know, God blessed me to have the ability to play this game, you know, so it really comes down to the hard work. And I knew my dad, the way he taught me and raised me is that, you know, I have to outwork everybody else. I couldn't just be good. I couldn't just be talented. I had to outwork everybody else. And so the mentality of working harder than everybody else is working, trying to make sure that I'm the hardest working person in all the NFL, that's my goal. Obviously, I don't know if I achieved it or not because I don't know how other guys are working, but that's the mentality I have and I've always had. And then then the physical attributes God blessed me with, and I figured out there's a chance that I'll be pretty good. And, you know, it was definitely a dream, and it was hopeful, and I wasn't sure, but I truly believe deep down in my heart that if I put the time and effort in like I know I would, that I would have an opportunity to dominate on Sundays, and hopefully for a long time. Now, you can't factor in, like, health issues and stuff like that. I've been very, very blessed, you know, from God and having the trainers that I've had and the people that have taught me how to take care of my body really made a difference.
Clint, you have very obvious gifts. We can see this. We know this, but it doesn't mean it's easy. In fact, it has not been easy at all. One of the other things you've talked about is now that you've been with the team for a season, you're ready to really sink your teeth even deeper into the community and to give back and to help out. Back in April, you tweeted a photo from when you were living in a homeless shelter. What do you remember about that time, and how much does that motivate you to give back now yourself?
It's a big motivator. You know, that's the time of my life where, you know, I was really embarrassed by it, and I didn't really want to talk about it much, you know. But then, you know, once I became successful, you know, I look back on it, and there's so many people who are very giving, and just, you know, seeing how hard it was for my family who, you know, my parents were, you know, hardworking people who, really just fell on hard times and just needed a little helping hand at a time, you know. And then, you know, got back on our feet, and we lived pretty good at points after that, you know, before I went to college. And, you know, it really meant a lot to me to really try to help and give a helping hand to those people in need. You know, there are a lot of people who are good people who just need a helping hand at times to get started. So that's really important to me to try to, you know, be the helping hand.
I appreciate that. Calais Campbell joining us. You hosted a bowling event last month to benefit your foundation, the Charles Richard Campbell Foundation. Now, I know you're a pretty solid bowler. How are your teammates when they get loose on the lanes? Are there any standouts or a lot of these guys having trouble and struggling on the lanes?
I have to give my man Tevin Smith a shout out because we play often. You know, it's like a team building thing we do. And when I first played against Tevin, he was terrible. I mean, he was barely bowled 50, 60. You know, it's like, what are you doing out here, man?
Wow.
And then I talked trash about him. And I even posted a picture and gave him like just talked a little bad about him. And I don't know if he went in practice or if he just got more focused. But he whipped me the next time we played, you know. And took my money and everything, man. Just got to give him a shout out for that.
Have to. Before I let you go, a few weeks ago, the league did announce a change to the national anthem policy. Can I get your thoughts on that? What's your reaction to the change and to the new rule?
Yeah, it's one of the things where you have to do what you have to do. You know, anytime they make changes, you know, it's just part of it. You know, I do believe that the initial reason why anybody ever took a stand or tried to make a protest is because we wanted to create change. I mean, there are real issues in this world that we live in that get, you know, kind of neglected and people forget about because you don't deal with it on a day-to-day basis. If it doesn't really affect you, then you kind of forget about it. And so I was really excited to be, you know, try to make a difference in this world for myself. You know, I have put, you know, big goals, you know, still to this day of trying to make a difference in the communities I live in and really around the world and nationally for sure. And so, you know, the taking a knee and trying to, you know, protest, it really was just trying to bring awareness. It wasn't really protest, it was bringing awareness. And, you know, I understand the NFL's position, and I understand that, you know, they have the right to make rules, and as players, you have to abide by those rules, you know. And then at the end of the day, you know, I feel like there's got to be another way to make a difference, you know, and there are. You know, we have, as creative minds, people who want to really feel passionate about making a difference, have to come together and figure out a way to really affect change in a positive manner on a daily basis.
You know, I appreciate your thoughts on that, too. One really quick follow. Do you think that new rule is going to help the situation, or might it just complicate matters?
You know, it's really too soon to tell. You know, I have no idea to really know how it's going to affect. But I do know that there are a lot of people in the NFL who feel strongly about creating change. And, you know, they're going to be creative new ways to do things. You know, I don't know if guys are going to use that new rule as a way or not. You know, I have no idea knowing, but I do know that guys want to create change, and there are a lot of ways to go about it. And so hopefully we can come together and do some things, you know, throughout the whole NFL.
Tony Jefferson is my guest. Tony, it's good to have you back. How are you?
Doing good. How you doing, John?
Good, good. Tony, let's go right to the really important stuff, man. Like the real hot, controversial stuff right off the top. I've got to get your thoughts on your golf game. How is your golf game these days? How are you swinging them?
I've progressed really well, actually. Took me a while. I was renting out golf clubs, you know, my first couple times golfing, but made a trip to Dick's Sporting Goods, got my own clubs, and I got my first birdie a week and a half ago, so getting good.
I got to know, man. So where did you get that first birdie? What track, and what did it feel like?
It was at the Black Mountain golf course in San Diego. It was a par five, so my first shot, I off the tee, I nailed it probably around almost 300 yards off the tee, so that helped me out big time with my other shots. I felt like I'm ready after that one.
Tony Jefferson, my guest, how long was the putt?
Well, I actually got caught in a bunker, in the sand bunker, and I just freestyled out the sand bunker, and I hit it out, and it hit the greens, and it rolled down to about literally 2 feet from the hole, so I got lucky there.
Dude, a sand save, birdie putt, man. You, something like that happens, and you feel like you got it. You got it. Now I'm ready to roll. But that's golf, man. You know better, right? Like, you don't have it. You know it's golf. Right when you think you've got it all figured out, you know it's going to come back and bite you in the ass.
Oh, yeah. Got me the next day.
Exactly. Tony Jefferson, my guest. Like I said, we had to get the important stuff out of the way off the top. All right. Also, you recently hosted your annual 7-on-7 tourney at your alma mater, Eastlake High School in Chula Vista. What did you make of the tournament and the players that were on display?
Oh, we had a great turnout. You know, had 10 teams there. It was kind of a rough spot because during that time, there was so many other tournaments going on around the area. So I was really appreciative of the teams who did come out. It was competitive. Came down to the wire in our last game. Obviously, the winner of the tournament got $10,000 to go towards their athletic department. So, you know, it was a real good turnout, very competitive.
And Tony, you're established now in the NFL. So what's it like when you go back to Eastlake, and what kind of memories do you have of your time there?
Well, you know, even when you just said it, this being my sixth year, I kind of, you know, raised my eyebrow. It kind of went really fast. Being the fact that I am only 26 years old, I kind of feel young, but at the same time, football years, I feel pretty old. So it feels good to go back home, especially to Eastlake, you know, where it all started, basically. You know, I was the running back there, so. When I touched that field, I just remember running all over the field and running people over and running by people. So, good memories.
Tony Jefferson, my guest. Listen, I always like talking to you because you're a guy that will keep it real. You're a guy who's honest. And last season ended in a brutal way with that loss to Cincinnati. And you were pretty emotional after that game, talking about how that was your favorite team that you've ever been on and how appreciative you were of the team bringing you to Baltimore. What was it about that particular team that made it so special?
Just the ups and downs that we went through. I mean, we had a tough little stretch in the beginning, but we prevailed pretty good. I think just putting ourselves in the position that we did at the end of the season, being able to be able to have the opportunity to make the playoffs, and I wanted it so bad for everybody on the team to be able to be with us and do that for what we did. We made a nice run at the end of the season to put ourselves in a position to do that. And then for the season to end the way it did, I was heartbroken. I didn't have any words to really say at the moment. But for the guys who are back, I think they felt kind of how I felt. And we're hungry, hungrier, obviously, for this year. And can't wait to be on the field.
Hey, Tony, can you express what it's like? For instance, I think a lot of the audience has never played football, much less at this level. You know, we all go to work, and sometimes you work with people you like and people you respect. Sometimes you work with people you don't like and you don't respect. So is there any way to describe what it's like to do what you do? I mean, as physical as it is, as demanding as it is mentally and emotionally, where you're putting yourself out there and literally taking your life into your own hands every single time you do it for your job, and then to pay that price physically and emotionally with guys you respect so much, what's it like? What kind of a bond results from something like that?
Yeah, I think it's a hidden figure that gets lost in the game is how close you become with the guys that you grind every, you see them every day, and you pretty much, for the most part, you live with those guys, because you're at the facility and you're out traveling more with them during this particular time of the year, with them more than you are with your family, and they really become family. You see the same faces every day. And like you said, we're all out there sacrificing and, you know, giving up our time, giving up our bodies for this one game that we love. And where some will say it's just a bunch of people just chasing a pigskin. But to us, it's much more than that. There's so much more that goes into it, including all the film work and everything that we do for the game. So it's definitely something sentimental, you know, for everybody in the league.
Baltimore Ravens safety Tony Jefferson joining us here in the jungle. During the offseason, the league made changes to the policy regarding the use of helmets in a tackle. So now a player is going to face a 15-yard penalty and possible ejection if he lowers his head and makes contact with his helmet against the opponent. You know that rule. What do you make of that change?
Man, I'm not changing the way I'm playing and how I've been playing. So I'm going to do what I got to do. I'm not going to be out there concerned about how to hit anybody. I've been playing football for a long time, and I've never had the intent on hurting anybody or doing any of that. So I'm going to continue to play football the way I play. They'll call it how they call it. Obviously, I don't know how they're going to call it. I mean, if you're in the trenches, obviously, sometimes you're going to use your top of your helmet sometimes. So I don't know how they're going to call it, but I'm not going to let that slow me down.
Tony Jefferson joining us. You know, when you talk about it, I don't know how they're going to call it. I've had a number of defensive guys say, all right, fine. The rule is fine if they enforce it on offensive players too, because, you know, running backs, wide receivers, tight ends, even a quarterback will drop their head to initiate contact. Do you think it's going to be equally enforced between offensive and defensive players, or do you think the refs are just going to focus on defensive players?
Well, it has to, I think personally it needs to go both ways. I mean, I don't understand how one side can lower the head and the other side can't. If you're going to call it fair, or I just think it's just going to impose a bunch of more problems that the league doesn't need.
We're talking to Tony Jefferson. Tony, let me get you to talk basketball for a minute. I know you've been watching the NBA Finals. I know because I've seen you tweet about them. What do you make of the first two games of the NBA Finals?
You know, the series should be 1-1 right now. You know, so a couple bonehead plays. Everybody wants to get on J.R. Smith, but George Hill's just got to make that free throw. They're free. Make them. You got to make those. So this one, it should be 1-1, but it's 2-0 right now, Warriors. But like I've said before, I mean, the Celtics were up 2-0 on the Cavs. I'm not saying the Celtics and the Warriors are the same, but, you know, this series don't technically start until a team wins a road game. So we'll see tonight. But I do think that the Cavs have been playing the Warriors a lot tougher than most people have thought, and they have a lot of people on the edge of their seats, more than people may have thought they would have. So I think the Cavs can pull out these next two, then we've got ourselves a really tough series.
Like I said, you're paying attention. You know, that point you made about George Hill, I mean, J.R. Smith has taken a lot of heat here and everywhere else, and I think that George Hill, to a certain extent, is skating because he didn't make that second free throw. But what about J.R.? Like, have you seen that video that got out the last couple of days where Bron is on the bench and he's not saying anything, and now everybody's coming for LeBron saying, come on, man, you got to pick your guys up? I mean, if you're a teammate, how would you handle a situation like that? I mean, is it LeBron's job to pick up J.R. or George Hill, or really is there nothing you can say at that point?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, you got to – come on. You thought the game was like, pay attention to the game. What do you mean? What do you expect for LeBron to do? I mean, you understand the magnitude of the game. You understand the magnitude of the series. And to be able to possibly go up in the game and possibly win the game for him, I mean, he was frustrated at the time. You can't – you want a pat on the back. I mean, we're all grown men. You need to – if you're on that court, you need to know every situation. You need to know what situation you're in. You need to know what would happen with whatever you do before the play even happens. So that's all on JR. You don't need a pat on the back. I don't understand that argument with people saying so.
I don't either.
There ain't no time to feel sorry for people.
There ain't no time to feel
finals.
The NBA Finals. Grown men playing in the NBA Finals. That's no time to feel sorry for anybody. Tony, you mentioned you're 6 years in, and it's going fast, and you know what your body feels like. I'm not saying that the NFL is the NBA, but you're 6 years in, and then you see LeBron doing what he's doing 15 years in. Is there any doubt in your mind that he's the greatest of all time?
No, he's the greatest of all time. He's playing the best basketball now of his career, in my opinion, now, in year 15. Just his work ethic, everything he does, what he does to keep up with his body. The dude didn't even come out of a game, you know, playing 48 minutes. I mean, come on now. At 33 and 15 years in, yeah, there's nobody. He's a machine, and there's nobody that's ever going to, I think, come close to what he's done and what he's capable of doing.
Yeah, thing is, though, I'm not sure that he's ever had his own box of donuts on National Donut Day the way that you did with your face on them. Look, I know you're not playing the game for selfish reasons and personal honors, but, dude, is there a greater honor than having a donut with your face?
Man, shout out to Dunkin' Donuts for making the Tony Jefferson donut. That just goes to show I'm the real 23.
You are, dude. You are living the best life, man. You've got your own donut. You got your first bird this week. Got another shot with the Ravens. You are living your best life. Breaking down the NBA Finals on a big radio show. Tony, I appreciate you, man. Always good to have you on the show. That's why I love doing that interview, Tony. Great to have you back.
Yeah. Much love. Appreciate it, man.
Let's go to Richmond. Jeff in Richmond. Jeff, what's going on?
Jim, thanks for the vine, and thanks for the time. And Jim, we've got your back here in the Commonwealth of Virginia for the National Radio Hall of Fame. You can count on that. Jim, if you'll indulge me for a brief moment, I want to give a shout out, Jim, to all my peeps in C-Town, all my peeps, Jim, in D-Town, all my peeps, Jim, in C-Bus, and in H-Town, and in SoCal, and in NoCal, because as you are well aware, Jim, my heart beats, Jim, for my peeps. Jim, I experienced what I call a moment of clarity last week. I wanted to share with you and the morally bankrupt clones. Jim, I came back from my hot yoga class on Friday. You know the routine, Jim, mind, body, spirit. I was walking down, Jim, my exclusive private driveway. I was looking out, Jim, at my 6 luxury sleds, sparkling clean, freshly polished, and perfectly aligned. And, Jim, when I put some Armorall on my Mercedes diesel E350, I came to the realization, Jim, it was time for me to come back to the Jim Rome Show and rip the roof right off this joint, Jim. We've known each other for 20 years. We're friends. We're colleagues. And I know the two words that come to mind immediately, Jim, when you think of Jeff from Richmond are humble and modest, Jim. I'm very humble. I'm very modest. And I want to say how humbled I've been the last several weeks, Jim. The dramatic return of the dirtiest player in the game, Jim, on May the 3rd. Not only was it a holy moment, Jim, but the outpouring of love and affection and respect, Jim, from the biggest gaggle of misfits in the history of sports talk radio. Jim, it's been overwhelming. Not one negative comment. Not one derogatory statement. And when you take into consideration, Jim, the beast, which is social media, full of its bile and its venom and its battery acid, not one derogatory remark, Jim. The only conclusion we can come to based on these facts, Jim, is that Jeff from Richmond has established himself as the only legitimate sports radio god in this industry, Jim. And in the words of the great actor Denzel Washington from the classic film Training Day, Jim, King Kong ain't got nothing on me, Jim. But what I'm most proud of, and I want you to make a mental note of this, Jim, the CBS suits bumbling around in their horn-rimmed glasses and their microfiber polyester attire have gravitated to Jeff from Richmond at an alarming rate, Jim. Eric Spitz. Dan Weinberg loves himself from Jeff from Richmond, and I don't know if you heard the recent remarks, Jim, by CBS Sports VP of Operations Tyler Hale, Jim. They went something like this. Well, Jim, that new clone, that Jesse from Richmond, is quite a rascal, and I'm really looking forward to hearing Jesse call in at the Jim Rome Smackdown on July the 20th. Finally, Jim, very quickly, as the drumbeat grows louder, as we approach, Jim, the 2018 Smack-Off, Jim, I'm a made guy with a 20-year chip, but I really don't think the newbie clones and the 2.0s really understand the magnitude or the significance of this event. Clones, this is the most exclusive invite in all of sports and in all of entertainment. Clones, this event is the best of the best, and Matt from L.A. This event, Clones, is a showcase of the immortals, and Matt from L.A. This event, Clones, is the legitimate jungle legends, and Matt from L.A. Jim, the bottom line is this. This is my yard. This is my house. And, Clones, trust me, I'm not coming to take part. I'm coming to take over. And, Clones, I will never, and I mean ever, ask for your respect. I take my respect on the day the stakes are the highest and that it means the most. Are you feeling me, Clones? Are you feeling me? Jim, thank you for your time. Aloha means goodbye. War Commonwealth of Virginia. War Donald from Manhattan. War Rome and Marty walking arm in arm down Huntington Beach in matching fuchsia speedos with their hands lightly cupped on each other's ass. War Mr. Automatic J. Stu without the nicks and cuts of a blade. And until next time, Jim.
Good night now! Jeff in Richmond, where the hell do I even start? This would be one of the 2.0s that Jeff in Richmond was referring to. Let's go to Edmonton. Tyler. Tyler, what's going on?
Romy, how you doing, man?
Good, bud. You?
I'm good. Well, 2018 has been a bit of a comeback year, I guess, whether it be Jeff, Rich, or Oren. Got me thinking, man. What do you say we just set up a champion store for these guys and let them duke it out on the wood scopes? The 20 people that still care about these idiots can tune in, and nobody gets hurt. Nobody wants to be the one to deliver the final body shot that's going to result in Silk Daly needing a hip replacement. All these fossils like Jeff think they have some sort of reinvented game like Big Bart, when all we really have are a bunch of desperate Rafael Palmeiros making a senile jackass out of themselves. And, you know, it's kind of getting awkward listening to them talk about how they used to hang with you back in the day, then you became you, and they became irate. And now we have Jeff in Richmond calling in and taking up an entire segment with his ramblings about nothing. Literally. What did he say besides, and Jim, my sleds, and Jim.
Tyler. Tyler.
Call me.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. I lost you for a minute, but you're back.
Okay.
And Jim.
And then he proceeds toward that scrambled eggs for brains that's running your country. Like, Jesus Christ, Jeff. You might be more out of touch with reality than Trump and Hill Rock combined. Jeff is so old and out of touch that he used the keys on his corded phone as a sound drop. Sweet technology, bro. Last thing, Jeff, I met Eric Spitz, and I can guarantee you one thing. He did not know or care who you are. He did, however, have a lot of good things to say about a couple well-built Canadians. I'll see you on July 20th with a handwritten Minnesota obituary. Thanks as always, Romy. I'm out.
My man, Ty. Rack him. Matt in L.A. Matt, good morning. What's up?
Good morning, Romy. Don't you know me? Hey, so either Jeff doesn't comprehend Twitter or the river of denial runs deep, not only in Africa, but apparently also through the bowels of the Commonwealth of Virginia in Jeffrey Ranch Hand's pig pen. Even if you invoke the name Matt in L.A. five more times, man, you still won't have street cred like I got or the game I got, you car wash attendant, because you've mastered car detail 101. Doesn't mean you own any of these luxury sleds you line up and polish and scrub for a living, you squirrel squashing Sasquatch. And Jeff, that raccoon possum souffle you call breakfast must have you higher than Cousin Cooter's homegrown and barrel of moonshine to try to step to Mac in L.A. Because I got some steel-toe sentences and verbiage ready to tattoo your ass and dome, you deviant. Round two is done now. And so are you, ranch hand. Wore Jeff St. Matt in L.A. to get some relevance into his call. Unwore that Virginia vaginal swab. Outro.
Ah. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Damn, Matt. Let's go to the Finger Lakes. Donald. Donald, good morning.
Hey, Rome. So, as a greenhorn clone, just getting back to the jungle after a long absence. When Jeff in Richmond was calling in earlier this year, I was stoked to hear a veteran serve up a hot plate of smackaroni, or I was, until his take turned out to be like a crazy second uncle who refers to French fries as freedom fries, accosting me at Thanksgiving. Jeff, I respect a man with strong convictions, and I know both shows are live at the same time, so it might be a bit confusing, but this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio, not the Rush Limbaugh Show on your local Fox affiliate. Make sure you double-check your numbers before you call next time, and after you take today, you better reinforce the roof on your house of narcissism before the weight of your luxury ego comes crashing down through it. War hamburgers as one of man's greatest achievements. Unwar celiac disease. I'm out.
Rock him. That makes two, Jeff. One guy said you're ruining his life, and that guy made it pretty clear he's not happy you're back.
Good night now!